please now feel free for questions to either Stefan or our colleagues together here.
Okay, so kind of first question. Please, Mr. Schaefer from Equinet.
Question is about product on the context in your product.
Thanks for the question. I think first on the shareholder structure, we have, I think I've shown you the page where Quensenbach went down from 26.6 to 25.2. So it's still a blocking minority. It's still above the 25%. I think for all the reasons you would have to ask Quensenbach directly, I'm today here CEO of KUKA. I do have my own shares. But I think it's key that we have a stable basis. Also, Quensenbach attending with 7.5 million, which was on the next page, and I think 5% were pre-placed. And this whole structure, you know, we have today the more or less the guarantee that the 45 million are placed, or are, the banks are helping on the placement. Therefore, I think we have here a structure where there's a commitment from Quensenbach, from Walter Pratt, that we have here for KUKA, the best outcome. And I think being above 25 is a clear signal that they believe in KUKA. They were very clear they don't want to go to 30 or above 30. So I think it's really in line with their strategy and what they disclosed to us and to the market. That's number one. On the product, I think you will see on our place here at the fair that the pros and the, you know, the design to cost advantage of 25%, the energy efficiency for the customer, and all the other pros of the new products, which helps us to be more competitive. But in the end, prices are made by the competition and by, you know, our competition like Fanuc, Yaskawa, and ABB. And we have a price environment which is better than last year, but it's still, you know, price. Our customer wants to get the best price, so he's asking for different offers, not only from our side. What is our message today is, we do have a new product we launched today, and the new product is much more efficient and it's better from a cost perspective that we, our target margin in the products of 10% EBIT plus, or 10%, just to be straight here, at 10%, with this new product, we are sure that we're going to reach the 10% within the near future.
Bill, and maybe let me answer on behalf of my ownership. This is part of the question is directed to me. I am unable by the statutes of one of my funds to go beyond 15% of the value of that fund. If I were allowed to, I would subscribe to the full amount, but I cannot because of the statutes of that particular fund. Simple answer.
Thanks, Keith.
And maybe I'd like to answer a bit about your question, what is with the competitive position of KUKA with the new product. I want to mirror back in the past. I think we had a fantastic growth result over the last years up to 2008, so KUKA was very competitive. And if you look to the year 2009, not only KUKA was shrinking, the whole market was shrinking. So I think it would be wrong if you take the image with you that we had been in a position that we had been pricing ourselves out of the market. Yes, it's true, KUKA was not the cheapest product in the market, and I think we do not want to be the cheapest in the market. We want to be competitive. We want to give some USB and some advantages we want to show to you later to our customers, but we want to have a fair value, a fair price on the market. And we believe, as the shrinking last year was hitting KUKA, let's say, not so hard as our competitors, that we could gain additional market shares in the near future with this fantastic new project and product. And if you just imagine when you look to it that we have been able to decrease the costs for our success, I hope we can make additional money for KUKA with this new product. I would answer that way. Thank you.
Okay, next question, please. Please, Mr. Henke.
Yeah, I've got a few questions, please. First one, on cost cutting. Can you give some more answer, please, into the targets regarding Augsburg? What is the status there at the moment? Is everything on track regarding job cuts, and what about transferring production capacity outside of Germany, as you have already indicated, number one. Secondly, I was very surprised when it was said here in the presentation regarding the controller that energy could be saved by the new controller up to 90%. Here in the big context of green technology, which is also promoted here, what is really the efficiency for the end customer? Is it a big euro amount, or is it just a marketing issue? And alternatively, where can you save energy, electricity, or other things in this green area with your product in terms of production, but also in terms of application? Because at the moment, when you look around here at the trade fair, it's nicely marketed and promoted via the bamboo, but most of the bamboo I could find in front of the restaurant and not within here the different stalls. So this green issue. And finally, a question regarding the robot types, modularization, standardization. What is here the current status, please? The platform strategy, is it a bare platform strategy you have already achieved? Can you still optimize this strategy? And how many robot types can you manufacture with this strategy at the moment?
Thank you for your question. I think the technical question I will hand over to Manfred Gundle in a minute. But I think on the one hand, energy efficiency is over lifetime, so you need a different perspective. He was mentioning like the 100,000 installed bases, you know, which we're going to service. So you have to talk about robots you're selling to automotive, to an industry you're serving a lifetime 7 years times two, for example, as a benchmark. And also here the show. You know, it's a fair. We're attracting KUKA as a brand. We want to attract our customers. We are here because we have a product which is emotional, which we want to sell. And, you know, sometimes you sell with some bamboo, but in the end, you can only sell to customers if the hard facts, efficiency, energy consumption, price is made, and that we have shown in 2009 that we gained market share, and you only gain market share by price, not by bamboo. On the cost side, I think it's also not bamboo cost side. We, in Q1 call, Stefan Schulek and I mentioned that we had reached 70 million in 2009, 50% recurring. The target for 2010 is between 65 to 70 million recurring in total, so we have another 35 to reach in this year. We were mentioning or outlining that we are on track. We are, you know, above track, or we call it we are above our plan for the cost-cutting program. And as was also mentioned, the cost-cutting, the cost-cutting is very much focused on the systems business. And what's clear, cost-cutting is like the 120, 150 measures which are run by Walter Bickel, who is really focusing on the cost side, and where you have every 2 weeks like getting back from all the people in systems and also in robotics where you are on the cost measures. Cost, we closed down France, so the main focus of cost is systems Augsburg. Also in 2009, the rest of systems was positive. For systems Augsburg, we have some personal headcount mainly in 2009, which we don't want to disclose because it's something where we are very aligned and working together with unions and employee representatives that we getting to German capacities which allow a long-term, you know, a business which is running profitable. But I think we are in plan. It's more like on the material side, on the process side, which we're attacking 2010. We are in plan, above plan for the cost side. And it's key for us that besides the growth perspective, which you have seen with the new product and the new markets and also new products, We clearly, as a fourth goal, we have to work on the cost side to get the break even for the whole group. We were mentioning that 950 was at the beginning of the year. We want to go down break even to 900 for the whole group. Then that's only be reachable if you work on the cost side. But now I think on the technical side, Manfred, please, maybe to the energy consumption and the other ones, that we have more like the view what the new product is for the customer. Thanks.
Okay, regarding the energy consumption, it was a big requirement from our OEM customer. I think it is very important. On the one hand side, during the production, if you need energy, it's okay. Nevertheless, it was possible with the new Quantic series to reduce the energy minus 25%, or it's the same cycle time. With the same cycle time, or we can reduce the cycle time minus 25%. On the other hand, what is very important outside of production, because outside of production there is no productivity. And here we have a virtual switch-off of the system. We go down minus 90%. That means we need only 10% in a sleep mode, and we can start in 30 minutes, and we are ready for go.
I just spoke to guys from Fraunhofer Institute. It was quite interesting because they said, yes, the producers are promoting exactly this special feature, sort of standby mode to save energy. But if, as a producer, or let's say if a lot of producers, manufacturers, are using this, then you have the issue with the peak energy consumption and the peak energy cost you have to pay to the utility. And they argue that via this feature, it is very critical to how you can save money at the end, because if you pay higher energy prices for peak electricity, you need Monday morning, instead of running at an average rate of X percent through the weekend, and so also Monday again, that is a big issue. And they argue it is really a very sensible argument, you know, to say you can really save energy and it's a green feature. But that's their view.
Mm-hmm. I think maybe let's discuss maybe this question when we run around. I think it's always the question of the type of application. You know, I think it's something where we develop with our main customer from the automotive side, where it's an important feature. However, maybe there's IPA has a different view, but you know, it's key that you can offer this solution. Maybe people don't want to go for it, so they can have it without this feature, but we can offer it. And there, you know, it's an add-on. If you want it, it's good. Otherwise, you could go with the normal consumption. But let's go more detail when we run around.
Yeah, and I would add that it's also a question of the pricing models of the electricity suppliers also, to have additional payment for peak consumptions. So maybe if the industry has energy savings programs based on such technologies, then it's maybe also a room for improvement on the pricing models of the electricity suppliers. So the main focus is to save energy. This is the main focus, and this will be achieved by such technologies.
Okay, so next question from Mr. Klepp.
Just for clarification, did I get that right? With the new robots design, you're more or less replacing 15 different type of robots that you have currently in your product portfolio?
No. In the moment, we have the KLZ 1000 series and the COM series.
Mm-hmm.
And that means we have two lines. And for every line, we have separate components.
Yeah.
Right now, we have a modular system from 90 up to 300 kilogram. We have always the same base frame, the same components, and we have in total 15 robots from the modular system. A step of 30 kilogram payload from 90 up to 300, and the reach from 2,500 millimeter up to 3,100.
That normally implies now that with the introduction of the new robot, until the end of 2011, you're going to reduce the complexity of your production on the one hand.
Yes.
On the other hand, the working capital will be eased because you have more joint sourcing for the same kind of components that you're employing there. How much will that probably save you on a percentage figure, working capital to sales? And secondly, how much with the reduction of complexity is the 10% EBIT margin target held? Or is this with the new, because you do the design to cost now, where you save cost of 25%, is 10%, is it normally something that you would like to have over the average, or is it probably even more possible with this kind of big savings? Because if I got you right, the price will stay the same that you market your product for.
I think one page I want to mention again is page 17 concerning the questions of complexity. You have to distinguish between the applications, between the payload, and also the reach of the different robots you see here, the area which is covered now by the new Quantec generation. Concerning payload, as I think Marvin Gudel mentioned, from 90 to 300 kilograms, we have one mechanical platform, let's say. So you will never be able, I would say, to cover every payload by one platform. Yeah? There is a lower payload going below 90 kilograms, going down below 5 kilograms, for example, for GI applications. You will not have the same mechanics. And I think the complexity reduction is an upside potential in our cost savings expectations concerning the new platform. Basically, for us, it's important that we have some 2 to 5K, depending on the application and the configuration of the robot, unit cost savings potential based on the new generation mechanics and new controller unit. Depends on the order what saving is here possible. Concerning a working capital question, initially the main driver of reduced working capital is simply then also the lower cost of the materials, because you have lower material costs in the cost of goods sold, therefore a lower value in the inventories also, because the parts are cheaper or less complex compared to the existing positions which are in the inventory. This is the main driver of working capital reduction. The other potentials we have, for example, then a more common part, for sure have also a positive impact on working capital, but today, main driver for working capital and for profitability is the cost savings, the unit cost savings potential. I think on the arbitrage, on the pricing side, you will see some features of the controllers unit, which is new also for the market, but I would not today count on any USPs which could improve the pricing position of KUKA in the general industries market. These markets are all also, to a certain extent, I would say, mature. Therefore, it's much more important for us to go to these advanced robotics issues where we have these USPs. And I think when looking back, let's say, 15 months ago, when you heard the story about the integrated KUKA corporation, and when you look to slide 31, maybe this is the real and the right approach how KUKA can combine its competencies in systems and robotics. Slide 31. Here, and this is really where you can see, this is really a unique selling proposition of KUKA. We are the only company in the world which has a lightweight robot and also the competence to build a system. And this is really where KUKA can leverage this USP. Yeah, and these are the incremental margin potentials we have besides the unit cost savings, these new businesses, lightweight robot and medical robotics, and this assembly story. These are the main drivers for future value, and this, for sure, these drivers will significantly outperform any pricing potential in the existing general industries automotive robot business.
Okay, with this, next question, please, Mr. Pace.
I was wondering if you could tell us what you're doing to take advantage of the current period of euro weakness sitting against your Japanese competitors, and what you're doing to increase your underlying competitiveness. And the other question was, maybe tell us whether bundling, whether that's with the CNC devices or the inverters, gives other companies like FANUC or ABB an edge over yourselves.
I didn't get the second part. The first part is euro. The euro weakness, in the first instance, euro weakness is helping us. You know, we have for robotics, we have approximately 95% of the production facilities in Augsburg. We do have up to 15,000 robots in Augsburg. We have 2,000 in Shanghai. So So euro weakness helps us in exporting robots on a global basis.
Pricing to take market share.
You know, on the one hand, the model of selling robots is for automotive, you having frame contracts with lasting for 2 to 5 years, which with agreed prices. So therefore, you might have a better standpoint because you have supply chain. It's cheaper because you can source cheaper. The price is fixed for the automotive companies. On the general industry side, clearly, the euro weakness can help you to offer maybe a more bullish price. However, you know, the price are mostly done with the competition. Therefore, I think we have seen that always the question is who is our competition? You mentioned here Fanuc and Yaskawa from the Japanese side. The yen is still strong, so it should be in our favor. I don't have exact numbers, but clearly if they're producing in Japan, and the yen is stronger, it should help us. We are sourcing our gears from Japan, from the Tesco, but it's partly hedged so that we don't have any big exposure to the euro-yen development. Another topic is from the U.S. You know that we have in our regions a natural hedge. That means that the earnings from the, you know, we're producing in these regions mainly from parts and with production in this areas in the systems business. So therefore, natural hedge in U.S. and Asia, and for the U.S. it means that U.S. earnings are getting stronger back to Europe. A 10% increase of the dollar is approximately $1 million on the EBIT line positive. Just to have a view on what the impact of a stronger dollar for us here.
So the second question was, does bundling robots with inverters or CNC devices give an advantage to other companies like Fanuc?
I'll start, and then maybe Martin can jump in if he wants. I think the bundling, you see KUKA here as two companies. You have systems and you have robotics. In systems, you have more business. You have always the dice business, and you have the assembly and test business, and you have the body and white business. Bundling is clearly an option when it comes to like one-stop shopping discussions where you can offer one solution. I will go maybe one step ahead is what we discussed with your colleagues in the last weeks also, the service business. We do have service in the robotics division, but what you see is when Martin is discussing is the growth option in other markets. If companies are growing very fast in PRIC, for example, they are getting expanding as fast that they don't. Their most important key is to secure quality and to getting cars out in the end with the same quality, which is if you double your exposure year to year, if you really grow, you have to secure quality, which means you want to get closer to your key suppliers, which I do see as a great chance because KUKA is offering body and white assembly and test. We can service plants, as you have seen in KTBO. We don't like the asset side. We like the service side to be open, so would be happy to service a plant, but I don't want to have it on the books, which we don't want to do. Therefore, this bundling and then having robots and systems is a unique selling proposition where we not only have a product and a project, but we develop for the customer a solution. A solution could be servicing a plant, could be servicing parts, integrating parts. So this is the technology expertise of KUKA, which is in the brains of the operational guys, and which we have to transport to the customers and being close to customers. That's from my side. I don't know if Martin, if you want to add something on
the
potential.
I think you couldn't say yes or no because it's depending on the situation. It would be too easy if we say yes now, why bundling? Let's attack the market and then we could grow over 3 months about so many percentage. It's not possible. You always have to focus on the customer in the middle and to understand what are his needs. And I think the key is if you're listening to him and you really find out the good position, then we can play the advantage of KUKA. Because if we combine the systems knowledge and the robot knowledge to get, let's say, the best answer for that case, and that could be a bundling, which is today also possible, but frankly speaking, only low decisions are running in that bundling, or which could be the separate decision, and every unit is running separately because we have a solutions business, which is on a different level than a component business, and the customer wants to decide to say, I go for my components and I write them as a base for the solution guys, then we have to react on that. And so we are not static in that game. So we have to listen to these cases. And number three, I forgot, has maybe to do, if you think about general industry, how far is he with his experience in the business? So in solar, for example, it often happens that the bundling is coming together because the experience with the equipment is not on a high level. That's clear. So if you combine that, the key is always keep the customer in the middle, try to listen, try to give him the advantage, and if that fits, then you're successful.
Okay, with this next question, please, Mr. Schramm.
I was a bit surprised to see the name of Grenzbach only in connection here with the shareholder structure, but not in connection with the strategic development of the KUKA. So Grenzbach obviously not an important point, important factor in this point, that you get access to different general industry applications, which was, I think, the first instance the thought, at least of the capital market, that this would happen, that this new major shareholder would give you here access to a new market segment. So what is the situation here? And I think they are even not represented here on the fair in Grenzbach.
No, maybe. No? Okay.
If I may, concerning your new lightweight robot, the look at the booth of Universal Robots, not too far away from your one. We find an application which is pretty similar to what you have developed, and I'm sure that other competitors are working on the same product. So shouldn't we expect that this will be a new robot class, which will be very common in a very short period of time, so that your unique position is not so unique any longer? Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I think the second question, Bernd Lippert will be going more detail. Lightweight robot is an industry-leading product. You know, if the competition starts buying your product, they will start to copy it. So we see that we have an advantage, that we have a time advantage. But, you know, for sure we have the big competition and they're working on the same solutions. It should be their job also. But we still see that, you know, being close with the customer and developing applications, we are here really ahead of the curve. The first question, I would like to turn around. You know, if Grenzbach, you know, that from their perspective, it's only KUKA on their own, which is, you know, was a valuable investment. So Grenzbach does have a single-digit million sales per year with KUKA. They are in solar, they are in glass, and they are in materials handling. So we have some discussion, as mentioned, in the solar area. But I think it's a really strong signal that, you know, there were no big combinations planned. It's a diversification of their family wealth. They were investing into KUKA because they believed in KUKA standalone. They believed in the product. They believe in, you know, in the market position, and they thought that KUKA was really low valued, and they, you know, believe that it's, the stock should pick up. But that's now the view of the investor from the history. Should talk to Grenzbach, but you know, can just explain what was at the time when I was investor. And maybe Bernd to the lightweight robot. Why we believe we are ahead of the curve?
If we are getting back to the lightweight robot. You have to remember that we need the sensitivity in this robot in every axis. We don't need the sensitivity in the whole system. For sure, it's easy to use a robot, a low-weight robot, six axis, and putting a torque sensor in front of the robot, which makes it possible to address a couple of applications. But if you want to have a robot who is really working together with a human being, you need a very short control loop in every axis, which means we have a torque sensor in every axis and a control loop with with pretty fast answer time. It's less than 1 microsecond to give the robot the signal he needs. If the robot, for example, touches a human being in the cooperation the robot is doing in surgery or something like this. And that's a unique feature only KUKA has. And to get an additional understanding, for sure, the mass of the robot, the weight of the robot, in addition to the speed of the robot, gives you the power the robot has if he would hit somebody. And therefore, it's a strong need to get the weight of the robot really down to a level of less than, let's say, 20 kilograms. Otherwise, you cannot stop the robot immediately in a couple of millimeters. And you can see some applications or some tests the DLR Institute did, because for us as an industrial company, it's not possible to do all these tests they did in their research area. But it's less damage on a human being if you would be if you would get a hit from the robot instead of a tennis ball. That's the biggest feature of the KUKA lightweight robot compared to the other systems you can find. For sure, on the other hand, it should give you a good feeling that it's a real huge market and everybody wants to get in the market, which means we have to speed up to stay in front of our competition. And that was the main reason for KUKA, to address this in a special group taking care of this lightweight robot now, and to make it a 100% product which is usable in industrial and in non-industrial applications.
I think one further comment, Bernd. If you look onto this picture, without sensitivity in the axis, you don't have a safe operation. Yeah? Because you can hurt people also in the axis. Therefore, it's important that for safe operation and human interaction, you need the sensitivity also in the axis.
Yeah, it's more a comment than a question. So, when you talk about uniqueness, I wonder if enough consideration has been given to this arrangement that has signed this morning and announced this morning with DLR regarding medical robots. I, as an investor, this is what I've been thinking about for the last 7 years, and I'm not speaking necessarily for Mr. Minning, with whom I sit on the strategic planning committee of KUKA, but we talk all the time about strategy. And I can tell you that when it comes to medical robotics, if I were in the shoes of the major competitor in this area, who is Intuitive, I'd be nervous. Because what KUKA and DLR are in the process of developing is the unique feature of haptics, which means that if I'm 2,000 miles away and I'm on a submarine which is submerged and I have somebody who needs a particular kind of surgery, that I can conduct that surgery as long as I can keep my periscope up or an antenna and feel what the robot is doing. That is what's called haptics. And this is a tremendous breakthrough. And if I were Intuitive with its bloody Da Vinci robot, I'd be very, very nervous. There's a $4 billion market cap on the monopoly producer and a 350 to 400 million euro market cap on KUKA. There's a discrepancy here.
Thank you. Thank you. I think it's an example of submarine we all will remember when you talk about having the robot in the submarine and we think about you. Okay. Further questions?
Next question, please.
But one comment from my side. You will later get the chance, or one of you also, to get in touch, to get that feeling for that haptic. We will do that downstairs on the shop floor.
Okay. Next question, Mr. Klepp from Berenberg, please.
Yes, I'm just wondering again on the U.S. I mean, we know that the U.S. car industry is more or less in a quasi, more or less desolate state. They have outdated production facilities there. GM closed 14 plants, etc., etc. They desperately need new technology there. And you have a quite good showcase there with KTPO, and that showcase is winning prizes for year after year. So what about the prospects and getting to the business there, having as well sold robots to the US, especially in conjunction to your question with the foreign exchange development that we currently see? Is there some possibilities for you?
You know, clearly we the U.S. market is described by you, and U.S. market was picking up earlier than Europe, so we also see big demand from Europe. If we see our key customers, and Ford is one of the important customers, I think Ford and Volkswagen are two of the companies who managed the crisis last year very well, and are both very global companies. So we are close to Ford. Ford is expanding the capacity in the U.S., and we are close to Ford in this way. We are strong in the U.S. with our system business with Ford. On the robot side, we have big potential. U.S. is clearly one of the markets where we attack and train industry, and we saw further growth potential. But that's so far. So we see auto in the U.S. We see exactly the factors you're mentioning, which are, you know, in the end are the demand from U.S. car companies. But not only in the U.S., but, you know, Ford, they have a global CapEx program. They also need, the same as European ones, they find growth in brick, and they have in their hometown or in their home country, they have to get high-end technology that they're really getting the labor cost down, and they have capacity adjusted to the market. But, you know, market in the U.S. means that it's replacement CapEx, and we have to build a new plant.
Just probably another one on robotics with the new industrial robot design. And looking at the first quarter you had 115 million of order intake in robotics. Was that basically the old model and no influence of the new design already that you probably pre-sold to some OEMs?
You know, since we launched today the product, you can imagine that we clearly had testing phases with our customers, but the order intake will start today. And as you know, that order intake will then ramp up over the next month, and that we will really have the big numbers of new robots next year. But, you know, it's now key to really get the ramp up as early as possible and also have maybe some money to invest in ramping up general industry of the new product. So you will see, you know, if you're getting orders today, you will see 3 to 4 months, you know, our lead time in the robots. So today is June. June plus 4 of this year in October. So October, November, we might sell the first, but it's ramping up, and we will have the full effect in 2012, and 2011 will be a mix of the new generation, but also we have also worked on our old one, which we have a facelift, which is also an advantage compared to the old one. So that's a mix of old one, facelift, and really the new one, which is ramping up.
Well, for 2010, you can calculate the existing cost base for the whole year, and for 2011, we will guide you when we have then clear ramp-up plans concerning then transition from the old controller unit to the new one, and also from the old mechanics to the new one. We have two components. One is the controls unit, the other is the mechanics. But for 2011, we will guide you.
Okay. Next question, Mr. Remit from LBBW, please.
Yes, hello, gentlemen. I'm missing some figures there inside the presentation. My question would be your new products, or let me say the new fields you're going in. On the one hand, BRIC countries, and on the other hand, advanced robotics. Do you have any idea where do we want to stand in 3 to 5 years regarding sales volume? And maybe divide between systems and robotics, because I think robotics will be on a smaller footprint at the moment as systems. And adding to your new products with you have developed with the DLR, do you have to pay any royalties for the future, or how are these agreements between you and DLR?
I think first of all, today is Investor Day. We're going to show the growth option for the future. We have a capital increase. That means also we have guidelines what we can disclose today. Though maybe if I would be happy to disclose you much more about market positions, but it's something where you need some external view. I could tell you where we are in certain markets, but that's since we have a prospectus out, we need some some numbers from statistics, which you could also discuss. Therefore, on the market side, we clearly focus in general industry, in other words, in certain markets, and want to show the top positions. We have goals to be getting leading positions. We will come up clearly in the next quarters where we want to be positioned. And also in PRIC, Martin was mentioning that we are in discussion with our customers on projects in Asia. He was mentioning Thailand, South America. That's something also where we, together with the contracts, will announce more where we, how big we're growing. I think if you look at the cycle, since you're from Stuttgart, you know Dürr very well. Dürr is very early in the cycle. They have announced a lot of contracts because, you know, if all the Volkswagen other ones are going to Asia, they're first buying the paint shops. And later in the cycle, they're building the plant and buying the robots. So they had the big orders coming within the last 6 months. Since we are a little bit later in the cycle, and something we discussed in the last one-on-one, that shows also, you know, if companies go the first step, if they doing the design for the new product, if they're going to buy in the first product, that's something where we see the demand coming. And that's also, you know, we had the question in the first meeting here with the 87% growth in Q1 auto. We clearly see a nice trend in auto. And we believe it's, you know, the 87 for the whole year is not realistic, but, you know, we see a positive trend, and we see that we see enough types of new cars in this region and of plans where we are confident to meet our numbers and to have enough potential for the next years.
Finally, the international OEMs, is it standard today to have the same production size as they have in Europe or in US from the automation standpoint?
Maybe just I was visiting India and also China in March. And if you go in a Volkswagen plant and if you close your eyes and go in, and you could be in Wolfsburg, you could be within, you know, in Ingolstadt, you could be in India and China, they always have the same standards. You know, they have the same quality on the global basis, and they do have the same standards. So as long as I can have seen from the European OEMs, and I think the same would be for Ford, they have the same standards. What they sometimes do have, they are less automated in parts, but as soon as the quantity is picking up, they're starting to have full automation. And I've seen really projects where a customer had a, you know, still had some welding guns where people are standing there and they have really the big welding guns and weld the bodies. And as soon as they have to getting better quality and higher numbers, they're doing the full automation. So same standard. You know, close your eyes. You're in India and China. You don't know. But some potential to further automate. Yes, and a little bit, maybe the 10%, 15% where you could adjust to European standards.
Okay, one more question for Mr.
My question, depending on the royalties.
You know, we haven't, today we have announced a further collaboration with the DLR. There's nothing in on this MOU with royalties. Clearly, I think when you're having, when we're talking about patents, if someone has a patent, you have to pay royalties. In this example, there is nothing about royalties at this point. But, you know, it's a starting point, and we will, you know, since we are still seen as a very automotive, strong company, when you give us some euro for share for the medical application, we'll be happy. You know, this is a contract which is a starting point and where we want to guide you and help you in the next quarters and next year, what we want to achieve in medical, what other products are, and DLR is one product which you might see later here, where we're working together. And in the end, it's a business plan which is convincing and which is the right way to further to go into detail. And that's the starting point with DLR today.
And the lightweight robot.
The lightweight robot, Bernd, maybe you can, I think, on the lightweight, on the patent side.
We have a cooperation with the DLR Institute. It started in 1993, and it started with the overtaking of algorithms for the motion planning of the robots to make the robots faster, having shorter cycle time. That was paid development to DLR. We are owning the patents together with the DLR. Then we added the mouse pad, the six-dimension mouse, which is developed by the DLR2. It's part of our smart pet from our robots. And this is a system we bought from the Space Control. That's a spin-off from the DLR Institute, which means it's paid by units. And then in 1996, we did a lump sum payment, getting the patent, the exclusivity for the lightweight robot, and we added later on a cooperation contract between the DLR and KUKA, giving us the chance to have all the platform technologies surrounding the lightweight robot without medical application. Everything outside of medical exclusive for us, and the medical add-on, that was the memorandum we signed today, which gives us now the whole package, which started with the algorithms through the tools like the mouse, the input tool to the robot controller, and it ended up with a masterpiece lightweight robot we want to use now in the future as a special unit with a little bit different architecture for medical applications.
Okay. We have kind of a last question from Mr. Pacey, and please go ahead, sir.
I'm just wondering if you can give us an evidence of how successful and how successful you are growing your business out with your legacy European customers, particularly in Asia. If we look out 10 years, we may see that the top five OEMs could be completely different than they are today. So looking at kind of Geely and BYD and these kind of Chinese and Indian manufacturers, how can we kind of determine whether you've been successful in growing that part of the business?
You know, I think it's a very broad and general question, and it's maybe let me try to answer it in the following way. First of all, in 2009, difficult year, we gained market share. How do you gain market share? By being close to a customer and getting the contract pitch out. Secondly, looking in the geographies where we are strong in Europe. We have a footprint in the U.S. and we are well positioned in the U.S. and we have a footprint in Asia. So it's really also depending on the markets we are attacking, and we still have, you know, we have big potential in the U.S. We have big potential in Asia. In Europe, we have to fight. It's no secret. We are well positioned with European OEMs and also with U.S. OEMs. The Japanese and Asians are, on the one hand, Japan is a difficult market, we all know, but there are still Asian companies which we can not attack, but each one we should approach. And therefore, on the one hand, you know, it's keeping our high market share by new technologies, by being close to the customers. On the other hand, also convincing, you know, what we see is that all the OEMs, if you're getting in Daimler, you're getting into Nissan because they have corporations. If you're really with Fiat, you're getting into Chrysler. So, you know, it's also you're getting specified, and KUKA is specified by more and more OEMs. That's a potential for new customers. But clearly it's, on the other hand, competition is also knocking on the door. So there is no clear answer where our market share is. We're defending our market share, and in the growing market, we want to still defend plus getting new market share.
Okay, thank you very much for your questions, and there's a last one.
So we have not heard much about the systems business for general industry today. Could you comment a little bit on the processing of the orders you have in this business, for example, for the aircraft industry or the solar flat panel, and how do you feel is demand here performing?
Systems today, the robotic fair, so I think the focus was for us today on robotics. We are happy to, in the next session with you all, maybe to focus more on systems area. On systems, we do see a big demand from automotive. We had 4-day intake plus 27% in the first quarter, which it was in both divisions. In systems, we have also the growth in BRIC, so Martin was mentioning contracts with Ford in South America and also in Asia, which are system contracts. So the capacity game or the global expansion of our customers is clearly the same for systems. What else on systems? We have closed down France last year, which is was a negative EBIT contributor for the last 10 years. We're working on the cost side in Augsburg, where we clearly have where we are in plan or on plan, and have our homeworks for this year. The most part of the cost program is in systems. I think that is for this. We see the same pickup in automotive. You mentioned aerospace and solar. In aerospace, we gained a big contract from Northrop Grumman last year, which is 100 million, or was 100 million, which is going over 3 to 5 years. So we are working on this contract. Solar industry is, and we do have other Airbus business, so it's we haven't announced a big contract. We have smaller ones with Emperor, with the other companies from the aerospace region. And then solar. We know solar is a market which is, on the one hand, driven by subsidies from the state plus financing. That's something where we have big orders out, but the financing and on the backside is somewhat hindering the big contracts coming in. But I look at more like on the structure for both divisions, for robotics and all system, is we have auto and we have non-auto. And all the non-auto, even with aerospace, solar, or train business, or something, or welding business, it's a non-auto business. So I think solar and aerospace are same like in robotics general industry, where you're on the one hand having higher growth, but maybe then comes a cycle where you have lower growth. And key for us is to get the general industry, wherever it comes, solar, aerospace, or other application, we increase. And that's but there we will give an update. I think on the next one where we have focused more on systems.
Okay, maybe then last question from Mr. Schaefer.
Combining general industry and bricks would be my last question. I remember 2 years ago we have been sitting here and we have heard about how important it is to have system integrators on board which are capable, and have a proper network on this one in order to bring general industry up and running, because you are not focusing on the entire range of applications. So I wonder how your growth strategy should really work out in general industry in the BRIC countries on the lack of system integrators, maybe, or how your system or how your strategy looks like in bringing system integrators on board in order to address those markets.
It will not look different to that what we do in European countries if we go for France or for Italy. So we will have the job in our pocket to focus on local partners, because they have the local understanding and access to the local customers in China or in Brazil, for example. And I just want to lay the proof on the table. Even if the European market had been shrinking and that had been pulling down the whole cooker business at that time for two, we had been able to grow in Asia and in America or in South America at that timing. And that shows us that we have been able to grow with partners too. So if you look to the numbers of integrators or system partners, they had been growing between 2008 and 2010, because you're comparing it with the information you got in 2008. So for the future on, what will we do? We will focus on, for example, solutions for plastic, where we have a wide bunch of robots with the best platform. We will go with these solutions to the local market and will really work with local partners to integrate plastic products for customers which are producing plastic products in China. And that, I think, will give us the speed from the background to be successful in that point. If you look to facts also, if I could compare numbers from the past, I think that is something that is well known. In 2005, we had been selling about 40 machines in the China region, and in the year 2009, it was about close to 600, for example. So question mark could be, why should that slow down? We believe we will speed up more, and I also want to say to your question, I think we don't fear the competition. If we go down, we are facing the competition, and we don't want to treat someone. We want to have a fair competition in the market, but I think we are so attractive with our products and our solution in these markets, in the BRIC markets, that we could compete. And that should allow us to grow as it is predicted.
Okay, thank you for the last statement. I think all answers should be answered now. If you have further questions, of course, your IR team will be happy to take on the questions. Thank you for your participation, and have a great afternoon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. That will conclude today's conference call. You may now disconnect your lines.